Some people like surprises and some do not. Of course, it also depends on what the surprise is. For example, have you ever had somebody throw you a surprise birthday party? There was this one time in Australia when my roommate, he spilled the beans and he told me about a surprise party that they were going to throw me. And so I told him that I was going to climb up in through the second story window and surprise them. Little did I know, my roommate was a double agent. And so he told them what I was planning. Well, sure enough, I painstakingly climbed up and in through the second story window, and they all yelled, "Surprise!" It's a good thing I didn't fall back out the window. There's a picture someone took of it. Well, there are a lot of possible surprises in life, like a surprise bill, or a surprise baby, or a surprise visitor, or a surprise flat tire. And sometimes you think your life is going in one direction, but then you get hit with something that completely changes that. And that's the kind of surprise that we are going to look at today. A timid farm boy is told that he is actually a valiant warrior. And he ends up in the Heroes of Faith chapter, Hebrews 11 and verse 32. And so this morning, I want to start an Old Testament mini-series on Gideon in the Old Testament book of Judges. You may want to be turning over there. Now, maybe some of you are wondering why I do this from time to time. And no, we're not Israelites under the law of Moses, but he is the same God. And there are so many good lessons that we can glean from the Old Testament. You see, in Romans chapter 15, after quoting from one of the Psalms, Paul said, "For whatever was written in earlier times was written for our instruction, so that through perseverance and the encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope." And in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, after talking about the wilderness wanderings, he said, "Now these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction, upon whom the ends of the ages have come." Now, those of you who are familiar with the Old Testament, you would probably agree that the book of Judges is one of the saddest books in the Bible. It's often referred to as the Dark Ages of Israel's history. It was a period of religious and moral decline, national disunity, and foreign oppression. Idolatry, immorality, and wars, both internal and external, they were common. See, twice in the book, it says that everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Kind of sounds familiar. Whatever we want to do, whenever we want to do it. God had commanded the Israelites to be a holy and righteous nation. But they often had a hard time with that. And in the book of Judges, we see this cycle repeated over and over. Peace. Oh, everything is going well. Apostasy. They became complacent and sinful, and they forgot about God and fell away from Him. Oppression. God raised up another nation to punish them and try to wake them up. Repentance. Well, they realized that they had messed up and that they needed God, and so they turned back to Him and cried for help. Deliverance. Well, God raised up a judge to save them. And then they have a time of peace, which leads into apostasy, oppression, repentance, deliverance. Peace, apostasy, oppression, repentance, deliverance, over and over ad nauseum. As it's been said, the only thing we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. Now, the United States of America doesn't have the covenant of blessings and cursings like they did, Deuteronomy chapter 28 through 30. But since we claim to be a nation under God, I mean, it's found in our money, it's found in our Pledge of Allegiance, some people wonder if God will deliver us over to our enemies when we get too far away from Him. We'll see. Well, we learn from the last verse of chapter 5 that they had just had 40 really good years. 40 years of peace, which means the cycle was starting over. So, number one, for those of you who are filling in the sermon worksheet, The Midianites' oppression, verses 1 through 10. And I've asked Ken if he'd read for us this morning.
Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and for 7 years he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves in mountain clefts, caves, and strongholds. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, the Midianites, Amalekites, and the other eastern peoples invaded the country. They camped on the land and ruined the crops all the way to Gaza and did not spare a living thing for Israel, neither sheep nor cattle nor donkeys. They came up with their livestock and their tents like swarms of locusts. It was impossible to count the men and their camels. They invaded the land to ravage it. Midian so impoverished the Israelites that they cried out to the Lord for help. When the Israelites cried to the Lord because of Midian, he sent them a prophet who said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought you up out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. I snatched you from the power of Egypt and from the hand of all your oppressors. I drove them before you and gave you their land. I said to you, 'I am the Lord your God. Do not worship the gods of the Amorites in whose land you live.' But you have not listen to me."
It says that they did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. And we can see from this book that it often had to do with idolatry and the different practices that went along with paganism, like the fornication rituals and things like that. I mean, it was very appealing, and that's what everyone around them was practicing. See, this is what was popular. This is what was politically correct. And so they got a 7-year timeout. They lost their homes. They lost their economic system. Pretty much everything that they produced, it was either stolen or destroyed. Now, can you imagine how frustrating that would be? All of your work in farming or in ranching to just see it stolen by these raiding parties. Well, Gaza, that was southwest on the Mediterranean Sea coast, and so the Midianites, they basically dominated the entire land. And the use of camels, mentioned in verse 5, that made their long-distance raids possible. They're pictured like swarms of locusts that just come in and strip the land bare. Well, after the Israelites finally started crying out to the Lord, you know, how stubborn people can be, well, he sent this unnamed prophet who reminded them about what God had done for them and what he had said to them when he gave them the land. Now, there is always a problem when we forget what God has done and what God has said. Now, the point, of course, is that what was happening to them was their fault. And so, number two, we've got Gideon's call in verses 11 through 24.
"The angel of the Lord came down and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joaz the Abizrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a winepress to keep it from the Midianites. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, 'The Lord is with you, mighty warrior.' 'But sir,' Gideon replied, 'if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that our fathers told us about when they said, 'Did not the Lord bring us out of Egypt?' But now the Lord has abandoned us and put us into the land of Midian.' The Lord turned to him and said, 'Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?' 'But Lord,' Gideon asked, 'how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family.' And the Lord answered, 'I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites together.' Gideon replied, 'If now I have found favor in your eyes, give me a sign that is really you talking to me. Please do not go away until I come back and bring my offering and set it before you.' And the Lord said, 'I will wait until you return.' Gideon went in and prepared a young goat, and from an ephah of flour he made bread without yeast. Putting the meat in a basket and its broth in a pot, he brought them out and offered them to him under the oak. The angel of God said to him, 'Take the meat and the unleavened bread, place them on his rock, and pour out the broth.' And Gideon did so. With the tip of the staff that was in his hand, the angel of the Lord touched the meat and the unleavened bread. Fire flared from the rock, consuming the meat and the bread. And the angel of the Lord disappeared. When Gideon realized that it was the angel of the Lord, he exclaimed, "Ah, sovereign Lord, I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face." But the Lord said to him, "Peace, do not be afraid. You are not going to die." So Gideon built an altar to the Lord there and called it, "The Lord is Peace." To this day, it stands in Ophrah of the Abizrites.
Some people think when it mentions the angel of the Lord in the Old Testament, that maybe it's referring to a manifestation of the pre-incarnate Christ. But others just think that an angel who speaks on behalf of God and represents him could simply be identified with the one who sent him. You could say that it was God who said it or did it. Don't know. It's a good question for the box. Now, a wine press was usually below the surface of the ground. And here are a couple of different ancient wine presses that have been found over there. And threshing is loosening the grain from the husks and the straw, often by beating it. And then they would winnow it by throwing it up into the air, and the grain would fall and the wind would blow away the chaff. But this would normally be done on a threshing floor in an exposed area, an area that had access to the wind. Well, since the Midianites, they're always scouting the territory for something that they can steal. Well, he's trying to do it in a place that they wouldn't check or that where they wouldn't see him. And so that is the exact opposite of what you would expect. O valiant warrior, and not O big chicken. It's a bit of holy irony. Maybe Gideon looked around and said, "Are you talking to me? Are you sure you're in the right place? Scaredy cats? Yellow belly? Snowflake? I don't know. Those might fit better. The guy who's hiding from his enemies." Now, take a look at verse 13. Like Gideon, a lot of people have a problem reconciling suffering with God. See, in this case, it was specifically because of the covenant of blessings and cursings in Deuteronomy 28 through 30 and other places. If Israel obeyed God, he would bless them. And if they disobeyed God, he would curse them. But as you can see, there have always been people when they are suffering whose faith is shaken. I mean, it's not just a modern-day phenomenon. Well, Gideon's other argument was that he had never seen a miracle like the ones that he could read about in the Bible. Now, I've heard that one too. But instead of arguing with him, he was told, "Go in this strength of yours and save Israel from the hand of Midian." And so he replied, "No problem. Oh, I know why you've chosen me. You see, I've been waiting for this day." No. In fact, it was more like, "What strength? Oh, Lord, how am I to save Israel? Behold, my family is the least in Manasseh, and I'm the youngest in my father's house. I'm from the wrong tribe, I'm from the wrong family, and I'm too young." All right, let me just go back to threshing now, okay? And on top of not feeling up for the task, I mean, his point may have been that he wouldn't be able to raise an army, he wouldn't be able to call up soldiers from his own tribe, much less from the other tribes. Well, we find that both Moses and Jeremiah had a very similar response to God. Moses said, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? Please, Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither recently nor in time past, nor since you have spoken to your servant, for I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." And Jeremiah said, "Alas, Lord God, behold, I do not know how to speak because I am a youth." And it's very interesting that God said the same thing after both of those statements that he did here. "I will be with you." So here's my question. Would you have picked a discouraged farm boy to rescue Israel? A young man who is skeptical about God and skeptical about himself. Here's the wonderful thing. God doesn't just see us as we are, but as we can become. We learn from the Bible that God usually calls the lowly and not those who are already mighty. He often chooses unlikely, inadequate people. Abraham, he's just a normal guy, someone who didn't have any offspring. And Moses, well, he was a runaway prince who was taking care of his father-in-law's sheep. David, well, he was the youngest brother and a simple shepherd boy. Esther was an orphan girl in a foreign land. Peter, well, he's a fisherman with an impetuous nature, and I'm sure that you can think of many others, plenty of others. But have you ever felt like Gideon? Sometimes God calls us to do something and we're like, God, you've got the wrong person. No, he knows who he's got. It is so easy for us to look at our size, look at our strength. It's not our size that counts. It doesn't matter who you are, it matters who he is. Well, I like the way the New American Standard translates verse 16. I will certainly be with you, and you will defeat Midian as one man. Now, some people think he's saying, do you think you could handle one man? The point is, with God on our side, it does not matter how formidable the enemy is. Well, Gideon, he wasn't even sure that this one who'd been speaking with him is really speaking for God, and so he asked for a sign, and he prepared and he brought out a very generous meal for his difficult times. And the angel then touched it with his staff, and it burned up, and the angel vanished. It's a pretty good sign. And if you think about it, in those desperate times, a mere human would want to eat that food, not burn it up. Well, it was so dramatic that Gideon thought that he's going to die. He's worried that he's going to die. And we see that again in chapter 13, verse 22, with Samson's parents. No, he then built an altar. He called it the Lord is peace. See, instead of wanting to do him harm, God said, peace to you. And since they're in a time of war, maybe he's now looking to God for a time of peace after it's over. Well, whatever it was, his faith was growing, and that means that God had a task for him to get him started. So number three, Gideon's first task, verses 25 through 32.
That same night, the Lord said to him, take the second bull from your father's herd, the one 7 years old. Tear down your father's altar to Baal and cut down Asherah pole beside it. Then build a proper kind of altar to the Lord your God on the top of his height. Using the wood of the Asherah pole that you cut down, offer the second bull as a burnt offering. So Gideon took 10 of his servants and did as the Lord told him. But because he was afraid of his family and the men of the town, he did it at night rather than in the daytime. In the morning when the men of the town got up, there was Baal's altar demolished with the Asherah pole beside it cut down and the second bull sacrificed on the newly built altar. They asked each other, who did this? When they carefully investigated, they were told, Gideon, son of Joash, did it. The men of the town demanded of Joash, bring out your son. He must die, because he has broken down Baal's altar and cut down the Asherah pole beside it. But Joash replied to the hostile crowd around him, are you going to plead Baal's cause? Are you trying to save him? Whoever fights for him shall be put to death by morning. If Baal really is a god, he can defend himself when someone breaks down his altar. So that day they called Gideon, Jerubbaal, saying, let Baal contend with him, because he broke down Baal's altar.
Well, the name Gideon means cutting or hewing down, and so God told him to live up to his name. And the bull apparently represents the 7 years that they had been oppressed by the Midianites. It had been during the life of that bull. Well, he's still a long way from being a valiant warrior, but he did obey what God said, even if he was too afraid to do it during the day. So how did they figure out that it was Gideon? Well, they first checked the store across the street to see if it had any surveillance cameras, and Then they questioned the neighbors, see if someone was up late watching Netflix. Maybe they saw or heard someone, and they checked the sandal prints around the crime scene. And I don't know. Some people think that maybe it was known that Gideon didn't approve of idols, and so they already suspected him and questioned his servants. Well, verse 30, it really shows how corrupt they had become. See, they wanted to do the exact opposite of what God said in Deuteronomy 13, verses 6 through 11. It was the idolaters who were supposed to be punished. But his father came to his aid, and he came to this important conclusion: a God who can't save himself is not worth worshiping. You notice how Gideon was a good influence on his father. Parents often influence their children, but sometimes children can influence their parents. So this started him on his path to becoming a leader. But I think there's a really important point here to be made. If you are going to lead others, if you are going to do great things for God, you must first start with your own family and household. Like Gideon, we need to be tearing down the idols our families' altars to false gods. See, it may be the altars of the love of money or sexual immorality or something like that. And we need to be replacing them with altars to the true God. But we need to start with our families. And sure enough, like Gideon, man, it can cause some anger when we act on our commitment to God. Because some people are not going to like what we are doing, like our friends, family, maybe even our neighbors. They would much rather have the old you with your old altars, the same as they have. So number four, we now come to Gideon's fleece in verses 33 through 40.
Now all the Midianites, Amalekites, and other eastern peoples joined forces and crossed over the Jordan and camped in the valley of Jezreel. Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, summoning the Abiezrites to follow him. He sent messengers throughout Manasseh, calling them to arms, and also into Asher, Zebulun, Naphtali, so that they too went up to meet them. Gideon said to God, "If you will save Israel by my hand as you have promised, look, I will place a wool fleece on the threshing floor. If there is a dew only on the fleece and all the grounds is dry, then I will know that you will save Israel by my hand as you said." And that is what happened. Gideon rose early the next day. He squeezed the fleece and wrung out the dew, a bowl full of water. Then Gideon said to God, "Do not be angry with me. Let me make just one more request. Allow me one more test with the fleece. This time make the fleece dry and the ground covered with dew." That night, God did so. Only the fleece was dry. All the ground was covered with dew.
Well, the judges, they're often said to have received the Spirit of God in some way. And God was going to use him and would give him all the strength, all the skill that he needed. Now, again, we need to consider who is on our side. And so sure enough, he was able to raise an army from his own tribe and from the neighboring tribes. But there was a problem. He had another lapse of faith and became unsure again. And so he asked for another couple of signs. And after the first part, with the fleece being wet, maybe he was thinking, oh, that was kind of a dumb request. That could actually happen naturally. Well, looking at verse 39, we can see that he got a bit sheepish, no pun intended. And he knew that he's probably treading on dangerous ground, trying God's patience by asking for multiple signs like that. But again, God accommodated him. And one thing to keep in mind, though, is that God was the one who first went to Gideon with this job. And so maybe that had something to do with it. But how much proof did the guy need? But this really sounds like a great lack of faith, but God put up with his immaturity. God was trying to bring him from where he was at to where he needed to be. And yes, many times people are rebuked in the Bible when they ask for a sign or putting God to the test. I think it just has to do with the circumstances and the motives. And we get down on Gideon, but how many times have I had a lapse of faith? And God has had to put up with me and put up with my immaturities. Okay, it's about to get exciting, but we are going to stop there. You're just going to have to come back next week for part two. There are four main lessons that I want us to get from this chapter. Number one, looking at the prophet's message, may we never forget what God has done and what God has said. That's what started all their problems. Number two, God doesn't just see us as we are, but as we can become. Again, Gideon is included in the faith chapter, Hebrews 11:32. But he did not start out as a great man of faith. He had to grow into that. Number three, with God on our side, it does not matter how formidable the enemy is. It's not our size and strength that matters. And number four, if we're going to do great things for God, we must first start with our own household. We need to start by cleaning out the idols from our own family. Yes, Gideon got quite a surprise. Oh, valiant warrior. But many of us get the same surprise. And if we will let him, God will do great things through us as well.